Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Friday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM KADS, the sports animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Got a bunch of NFL talk today as the playoffs wildcard weekend is kicking off tomorrow afternoon. We went over an AFC slate yesterday. We'll talk NFC today. Also, I want to look at which quarterbacks, and this is for everybody, both the AFC and the NFC, of the 12 quarterbacks, who has the most pressure on them this weekend? Whether it be age, whether it be expectations, whether it be, you know, there's all kinds of different factors that would go into that. So who's got the most pressure on them this weekend at the quarterback spot in the NFL playoffs? We'll talk about those NFC games, break them down with Dallas, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, Philly, and also the Rams and the Cardinals coming up on Monday night. Update you on the high school basketball schedule. You know, we've had some postponements, some cancellations come down the pike here over the last couple of days with everybody starting to deal with the Omicron variant of the coronavirus, myself included. If I sound a little bit weird because I'm sitting on my kitchen table looking at the computer. And then also Thunder last night beat the Kevin Durantless Brooklyn Nets. Is this going to be the last year of the tank? Are they just going to, whatever spot they get, they pick with Josh Giddey's development? Maybe they found some diamond in the roughs in the second round of last year's draft with Wiggins, with Robinson Earl. Trey Mann's been pretty good as well. So is this the last of the tank? And also, maybe a finals preview last night and an absolute beatdown by the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending champs, kind of announced to the Warriors that, you know, they're not going to be someone to be taken lightly. So, Tutu, that's what we got planned for today. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in. 225-9698. If you're outside the listening area, you can listen to us a couple of different ways live. KADSAM.com. Type that into your browser, click the Listen Live tab, play button, and you're streaming us that way. Or the Paragon Communications app is available as well. It's free download on your phone, and you get everything. All three radio stations, you get the Penny News, and you get Big L TV, Paragon TV as well through the Paragon Communications app. And then, of course, we have the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back, check us out on demand. The Skinny on Sports podcast found on KADSAM.com or iTunes. And if you go to iTunes to find us, you might as well subscribe, because then you will get alerted each and every day when the new podcast has dropped. Hey, Jared, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
It's kind of weird not looking, looking you in the face right now.
That's not a bad thing.
That's for who?
For everybody involved.
It's a little rude.
No. It's a, come on. No one wants to look me in the face all the time. This is why we went in the radio. Am I right?
I'm over here with a sore throat, chopped up head. I'm going to get hammered for my looks.
It's me hammering my looks. My looks. You don't have to look at me.
The hairdo I got going on right now, the bed head, it is pretty phenomenal. It would probably make Jim Carrey's Ace Ventura character a little bit jealous of the way I've got it going everywhere right now.
All righty then.
Hey, update us right quick on what you've been able to compile as far as games that will not, and games that will, or at least so far the games that are on, and then those ones, the ones that we know for sure have been either postponed or canceled.
I will,
coming up either today or tomorrow.
I will do my best. I know that Canute at Cheyenne has been canceled. Those are big words, canceled and postponed. The message I got said canceled, so I don't suspect any kind of a make update on that one. I do know Hammond and Ceiling, which is one of those big games, especially on the girls' side. That's still on. I haven't been told any different of that, so that's still happening tonight in Hammond. I know Leedy and Merritt are still as scheduled, unless otherwise being told, but the only ones that I know that aren't happening, like I said, are Canute, Cheyenne. Eric was supposed to play tonight. Forgive me for not knowing their opponent. I was just told Eric's not playing. And they're also supposed to play tomorrow. That's not happening. And, of course, the Big Elks are not happening either. But Hammond's still playing. Leedy's still playing. I'm told Arapahoe's still happening. Merritt and Leedy's still playing. As far as the Paragon Network, that's what we got. I'm sure there's others out there, and we can't stress this enough. Text and tell us if you know of a game. It doesn't have to be a part of the Paragon Network. Any game in the listening area, let us know so we can relay that out there. 580-225-9698. You can text and tell us. And it doesn't even have to be within this hour. If it's after this hour, so we can get it on your sports report later this afternoon. We can get out there on the Facebooks and everything. We really want to know. But that's what we know as far as our Paragon schools.
Yeah, and we were talking off the air, and it's even more of a condensed version for the Class A and B schools because of the week earlier playoffs happening. As far as reschedule dates, you know, everybody's going to be in a tournament next weekend. So that takes one Saturday off the board. And then you look up, and you've only got two more weeks before you get into playoff week. And, you know, probably a lot of people would prefer not to play. Some don't have the choice, Elk City being one of those. You know, one of those dates that was made up with that Elgin game yesterday is going to be the 14th of February, Valentine's Day, which is a Monday, which is also district week. So I think you try to avoid that as much as possible. But when you, you know, Elk City specific here, when you look at their schedule, next week, a Saturday, you know, I say Saturday because those are kind of the open dates, right? You got the Tuesday, you got the Friday, and then, you know, roll into that next day. Well, the next Saturday is a tournament in Altus. The following Saturday, you've already got the Weatherford game that was missed, taking up that slot. Then the following Saturday, it was a game scheduled with Tuttle already. You know, and then you go to the week of the 12th, February 12th, that Saturday. You're into the district tournaments for A and B, so it gets really tough to find officials because they're all working those games. So, you know, as far as Elk City goes, depending on how long this lasts, you know, hopefully everything goes well over the weekend and then we look up and everybody's in cash on Tuesday. But it's getting to the point, I think, in the Elk City schedule at least, and I think with the A and B schools, it's kind of condensed into this version as well, where that postponements are going to turn into cancellations because there's just nowhere else on the schedule to be able to fit those games in ahead of the playoffs starting. And quite frankly, as we saw, you know, remember last year, everybody kind of paused for a week or two heading into the playoffs because everyone wanted to give themselves the best chance possible for the entire team to be available in case someone, you know, contracted the virus or whatever. That period was longer last year than it is this year, obviously, as far as what the CDC says and whatnot. But that's also the goal, I think, and the main focus for a lot of the coaches and the administration of these schools is, okay, we can afford to lose one here, but once we get into February, man, we got to have everybody as healthy as possible to make a playoff run because there's just, you know, it's a forfeit if you can't go.
Right, and this was also pointed out to me yesterday was don't forget with Class A and B, those rankings are locked in. So these are games that they can afford to miss in order to get healthy for that final stretch and, of course, the playoff run. So the rankings are already there. You know, you'd like to see these games. I mean, who wouldn't want to see Canute and Cheyenne and in other games? You know, I'm glad at the moment that Hammond and Sealing are still happening because that could – I mean, those are two teams that are expected to go deep in the playoffs, if not playing on a Saturday in March. So I'm glad those are happening. But if it doesn't, we don't need to cry about it because, again, the rankings are locked in and nothing will change.
That's exactly right. And here's the deal. I know Hammond and Sealing are different classes, but let's just say – that if they were both Class A or both Class B, you would give up a game tonight to see that game, you know, in an area final,
sure,
you know, or a state tournament at full strength. So, you know, you're right about that. That's a great point of the rankings being locked in for the Class A and B schools. And, you know, and quite frankly, you know, the others still have some time. I think next week is the finish, or maybe even the week after that. I can't remember exactly on the OSSA calendar. It may be the week after the tournament week, the end of January. I think that is actually right, because the 31st of January falls on a Monday. I think that is when the rankings locked in. So there's still a couple of weeks left for some teams, 2A through 6A, 4A for our purposes, basically, to be able to get some wins and to move up in those rankings.
Yeah. So, again, when we know more as far as who's playing, who's not playing, we're going to let you know if it happens with the next 45 minutes. We'll definitely get it on. But if not, I'd say, you know, just stay tuned to all of our sister networks. We'll get that out there. We'll have it in your Skinny on Sports report. Might even throw it on our socials. So we're trying our best to get that info out there. It's very fluid right now, it feels like. And it feels like even up till hours before tip, something could change. So we're doing our best to stay on top of it. And, again, if someone knows of a game that's happening or not happening and we didn't mention it and you want to get it out there, 580-225-9698, shoot us a text and we'll relay that info for you.
Yeah, this is a fun day, right? I mean, everyone's got to be on pins and needles, Class A and Class B schools anyway, because we're just hours away from the release of the pairings. Today is the day of playoff pairings being released by the OSSAA. It won't be brackets,
yeah. But
you'll know what your road is to the big house. So this is a fun day. You know, maybe that's the carrot that's dangling out in front of some of these teams. You know, it's a bummer not to get to play, but hey, guess what? You know, you're going to get to see the release of the pairings, and that's always a fun day.
It was like the last thing I thought of today was that. Everything I'm thinking of is who's playing, who's not playing. That completely escaped my mind, but this is a big day for small school basketball.
Yeah, I'll effort to see the timing of that. It feels like it's normally either 11 o'clock or like 3 o'clock is when it normally gets posted by the OSSA. So that's going to be a fun thing that we'll be able to discuss, no matter who plays and who doesn't, over the weekend. That'll be something, a major topic that we can discuss, obviously, on Monday. Real quick, looked at the Thunder last night. Man, it's a team that's not very good. We know that. But it's a team that's got some pretty good pieces. And the reason I want to talk about it is because it is exactly the midpoint of the season for Oklahoma City. 41 games of the 82-game schedule into the year. Oklahoma City 14-27, which puts them in a nice spot. I mean, 14 wins seems like a bunch for a team that's supposedly tanking. But at the same time, when you look at the standings, they're down there in like the fourth. They've got like the fourth worst record in the league. And so, you know, they're in a really good spot that way. But they've also played well enough to be able to really see what some of these draft picks that they've made, depending on who it was. You know, Giddey, obviously, I think is probably overachieved expectations. You know, that guy not only can clearly play in the league, but he seems like a piece that you're going to want moving forward on a good team. I mean, he's been the only rookie of the month in the Western Conference both times that award's been given so far this year. So, you know, with those guys, obviously SGA and Dort with some growth, to me, this has been almost the perfect storm of a season for the Oklahoma City Thunder from the standpoint of being watchable, if not competitive in a lot of games, yet losing enough games not to lose track of where they are in the grand scheme of things, but trying to get the best draft pick that they could possibly get.
It feels like the first season they were in Oklahoma City, they were watchable, competitive, lovable losers, for lack of a better term. And now that and you're right, and I there, you could see the pieces are in place, and I think they are one more high pick away. I know we're going to dive into this topic as far as how long will they quote unquote tank, but I think they're one more lottery pick away, and then it's time to the foundation's been laid. Now it's time to erect some walls here.
Yeah, and I think that the question is that you're talking about, is this the last season of quote unquote tanking? And I believe it is for a couple of different reasons. One, they're too good to tank. You know, when you look at what SGA brings, Dort, You know, they try not to play Kenrich Williams or Mike Muscala a ton of minutes because those guys are too good for this team to lose as many games as they need to, right? They're pros. And I think it's going to be interesting moving forward here in the next little bit to see if those guys get shipped out for kind of creating a down-the-stretch flexibility for Oklahoma City to kind of do a mini version of what they did last year, and that is lose when they know they have to lose, right? You know, they shut down last year Horford, SGA, and all of a sudden they almost lost the last, 25 games of the season. I don't think it's going to be to that level, but if you can move those two, maybe even to Derek Favors, then that gives you the flexibility to sit an SGA in a Dort, and then you're running out, you know, guys that are going to, you can have the facade of, hey, we're just looking at the young guys to see what we got, and also accomplishing the goals of losing enough games to give yourself that one last shot at a superstar, because I think they've done well enough with the acquisitions, with the trades, with the draft picks that they've made. They've done well enough to not necessarily be a fantastic team yet, but they're way too good to be one of these teams that just tanks every year. And so I think you're right. One more lottery pick, maybe even two, depending on how the Clippers finish the season, because they own that pick. So if the Clippers could help you out just a little bit, you know, and you could end up with, say, the 12th pick and, you know, a top five, then all of a sudden now you start looking at those picks down the road that Oklahoma City has an absolute war chest of as pieces to pick somebody up to fit in and make this team jump up into the middle of that playoff conversation as opposed as guys that we don't know the names of yet that might be in the sixth or seventh grade.
Yeah, and it's – you talk about this team is too good to tank. It's getting to that point where – and I think it will be as soon as next year where – you can't keep asking these guys or asking the coach limit their minutes, play this guy instead of that guy. And I don't know the inner workings there, but it's like a racehorse. You know, they need to cut them loose, let them go, let them win, and it's going to get to that sooner than later.
Yeah, and here's the truth of it. It's not like they're down, say, like the Magic, Orlando in the East. They're 7-35. I mean, even if you cut them loose, it's not like they would get up to the 21 wins it would take right now in the Eastern Conference standings to be that play-in seed. You know, that's 14 wins. I mean, that's tripling the wins. That's not feasible, you know, in one draft, basically. But we look at Oklahoma City, on the other hand, they're 2 wins away from that 10th spot that Portland holds. So it's not like it's this monumental jump from one season to the next just to get in the middle of the playoff race. And I actually think they're pretty fortunate in that this year, if this is their last tanking year, which I think both of us believe it will be, you know, you've got some teams in the East that are struggling more than anybody thought, Atlanta, Indiana, that maybe can go on a pretty decent win streak and get out of that cellar with you, you know, and then all you got to kind of look for is just a few teams around you to be right near that top three, top four, top five when it comes to the draft lottery coming up at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be interesting for me just to wrap up this season is, you know, are they going to be that competitive team or you know, and we haven't even talked about trade possibilities this year.
Right, yeah.
You know, deadline is just literally around the corner. It always sneaks up on me. And, you know, what do the Thunder do anything? You talk about all those picks. You know, if it becomes quite apparent that, okay, this is the last year, hopefully getting a lottery pick, maybe two because of the Clippers situation. And you talk about all the draft picks that they have in their stockpile. Could they do something as soon as this year? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they want to jeopardize losing their pick because there is ways where that could happen with protection. So
don't want to get better too quick.
That's right. and I think they want that one last shot with what they've got with their pick and also that pick from the Clips. If they can get, you know, quite honestly, cheaper labor out of the draft, but also contributions. And listen, I mean, you can knock Cressy for a pick or two here and there with Mitch McGarry or Perry Jones or whatever at the end of the first round. But over the course of his time in Oklahoma City, nobody has picked good players as often in the draft as Sam Presti has. Obviously, those top three to start with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden were phenomenal. But it looked further down. I mean, Steven Adams at the 12th pick, he was definitely worthy of that and played to that level. Then you go back in the 20s with Reggie, with Serge Ibaka, with Andre Robertson, even the worst that he had on him as the 27th pick. That's a hell of a pick, you know, that other people take guys that either never come over from overseas or never even contribute a thing in the league. And he's doing it consistently. And sure, there's misses. There's, you know, even the Cole Aldridge pick that ended up being Oklahoma City's. You know, that looked bad, but that guy played in the league for like 10 years. You know, so yeah. There hasn't been just a ton of absolute busts. And so far, it looks like the Giddey pick was good. You know, Poku might be on that list of busts. But once again, at the 17th or 18th, you send up a Hail Mary and you see what you can do. So it's been pretty impressive because, to me, the Thunder haven't gotten to the point of being near as bad as I thought they would. And I know, probably screaming at the radio, what about losing 25 at the end of the year last year? That's just because they didn't play anybody. It wasn't because their team was that poor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's a difference. They did that on purpose by not allowing, you know, Shea to play.
Yeah, you're not paying attention. If you're complaining, right, you're not paying attention to what happened last year.
And sure, they lost the game this year, but by the last 2 years, they own the record for the worst home loss and the worst road loss in the history of the league. But at the same time, that's one night. And I think that they've been able to keep a watchability a little bit higher than I thought, and they've darn sure been able to keep competitiveness a lot higher than I thought going in to what happened, going into what we thought it would be when the Chris Paul trade was made and it was officially tank season for the Thunder. So it hasn't – I don't know that the arrow is pointing as high up. It's not as pointing as high up as what you talked about with that first season because – they don't have a Durant. They don't have a Westbrook. They don't have a Jeff Green. But at the same time, I think SGA has been a lot better than people thought. And then Josh Giddey looks to be a piece on a team that can be a playoff team for sure. So just a matter of rounding it out. And I don't know if we're ever going to see just horrific basketball in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, this is it for the tanking. I'm with you. And next year, I'm anxious to see how the season ends, where the picks are, and what we do next year. Should be fun.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma City is going to be a fringe playoff team, if not a playoff team next year, with what they got coming back. Talking NFL playoffs, pretty much for the rest of the show now. We hit the AFC games yesterday, so we'll do the NFC games today, and then also at the end of the show, in the last segment, which quarterbacks have the most pressure on them going into the weekend, in the wild card weekend. Which ones have the most pressure? Text us your thoughts, 225-9698. I know Dakota has chimed in. I could not agree more with his assessment with number one. I've actually put him in kind of I've got three different groups, Jared. I've got five that, to me, have the most. I've got five quarterbacks that, to me, have almost none. And then I've got a couple of guys in between. It's kind of how I've done that. So we'll talk about that coming up in the last segment. Let's start with Dallas, the team most people around here want to hear the most about. Dallas versus San Francisco. It's interesting to me, Jared, that of all the games, and this bears out in the line from Vegas, it's the shortest favorite Dallas is at home. If you look at it, you know, a lot of times you get 3 points for being a home team, and that line is 3 to 3.5, depending on where you're looking. So basically what Vegas is telling you is, on a neutral field, they think this is an absolute pick 'em. And so, you know, to me, we talked about it throughout the week. San Francisco seems to be the team that has the best chance to win on the road going into Jerry World on Sunday afternoon against the Cowboys.
I don't get that talk, honestly. I don't understand why it's – I get it, everyone, the analytics of it all, and everybody breaks it down. Just – to me, it feels like this is the best team that Dallas could ask for in the first round of the playoffs, not having to play the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, who doesn't know how to lose in that building. I don't have to play the Rams, obviously. I want San Francisco. If I'm Dallas, I think they have Dallas has a superior team, the better defense. I think they're going to come back 100% healthy. They will. They'll get Parsons back. They will get Diggs back. I just don't know why the line is so close. I'm I just feel like Dallas could win by 10-plus points. Maybe I'm in the minority there. Obviously, I am with how Vegas is talking about this game. I just think Dallas has I like their chances more in this one than I have in the past playoff games with Dallas.
Well, for me, I think one of the stats that scares me a little bit in just watching the Cowboys defensively, they make the big, huge splash plays, but can they be solid against the run? San Francisco comes in as the eighth best rushing team as far as yards per game. That's in the top quarter of the league. Dallas' rush defense is dead middle at number 16. And it seems like in some of those losses, we've seen Dallas not able to control teams rushing the football. And, you know, San Francisco is going to do that because you know good and well they want to limit the exposure of Jimmy Garoppolo against the turnover-hungry defense that Dallas has. And then number two, for me, that worries me as a Cowboys fan would be this. Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, those guys make big plays down the field against a Cowboys defense. You mentioned Diggs. He's been a culprit on a bunch of these, you know, some double moves, trying to make the big play and in turn giving up the big play. And so that would be as far as San Francisco's offense versus Dallas' defense. Those are the two things that concern me as a Cowboys fan. Then you flip the script on the other side. That's where it's strength on strength, right? Dallas' offense versus San Francisco's defense. Dallas rushes at ninth best in the league. San Francisco defends the run seventh best. Dallas throws at second best in the league. San Francisco defends at sixth best. Total yards offense for Dallas, number one. Total yards against San Francisco's defense is third. Dallas scored the most points. San Francisco gave up the 10th lead. So that, to me, is the strength-on-strength matchup in this game at Dallas. So, that, quite frankly, the numbers look awesome for all the trepidation that's been around the Cowboys offense over the last, what, month and a half or 2 months.
Yeah, could it be that Dallas offense, it looked, like you said, the last month and a half, just kind of on cruise control. But, you know, when they play inferior teams, they're blowing out of the water as they should. Washington, Philly. Could it be, you know what, I don't know, the focus kind of lagged once they won the East. They knew they're in the playoffs. You know, they're going to be one of the top seeds. They didn't get the one seed, two seed, but finished with the three seed. I mean, could it be where they just kind of took the foot off the gas mentally? And now, you know, and everything changes in the playoffs for everybody as far as how you approach a game. I mean, you see it. You see it from from the last season game of the regular season, even if that regular season game meant something, and then to the next game in the playoffs. You always see it in every team. Boom, they're amped up. They're crisper, they're sharper, and sometimes that could lead to mistakes. Something tells me that the Dallas offense is going to be okay.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because one could definitely make that case. You could also make the case that Dallas's offensive numbers have been piled up against terrible teams in their division.
Sure.
And when they've had to play a team with the Pulse, it hasn't gone that way. Those are the games where Dak has struggled, been inconsistent, and the Cowboys haven't been able to run the ball against the good teams like they have the bad. And we're going to find out tomorrow because San Francisco's defense is fantastic. And, you know, coming out of this game tomorrow, that won't be something coming out of the game on Sunday, that's not going to be something that anybody can point to and go, well, Dallas didn't play a good defense if they run up a nice number offensively. The one thing that's definitely in the Cowboys' favor when you look at season-long stats and you look at who's playing quarterback on the other side, is turnover margin.
Oh, my
gosh, Dallas Cowboys. Dallas led the league at plus 14 turnover margin. San Francisco was a minus 4. That's 22nd best. Dallas led the league in takeaways defensively and picks with 34 takeaways, 26 of those being interceptions. Jimmy G threw 12 interceptions in only 15 games. So those, you know, if you can kind of bottle up the run game, put it on the right arm of Jimmy Garoppolo, and really get that pressure cranked up. That's it. To me, on Dallas' defense, that's when you see it at max capacity is Gregory, Parsons, Lawrence, whoever else on that defensive line, making the quarterback speed up his timing, which then allows a Diggs, when he's gambling to be in the right place for a quick throw.
Right.
When you see the Cowboys get in trouble is when they're not putting pressure on the quarterback, or, you know, with Tyler the other a couple weeks ago against Arizona, extending plays and then hurting the Cowboys down the field because he's athletic enough to be able to move around and let things develop down the field and try to hurt the Cowboys' aggressiveness. I don't know that Jimmy G is that guy. And so if the Cowboys can bottle up the run and let the big play defensive guys get going to the quarterback, that makes Dallas so much tougher to deal with from the opponent's offense.
Yeah,
and they get to a point where it's hard to beat them at right. that stage.
Yeah, those were the keys I was going to go to in this game for Dallas. You nailed it. Was stop. You know, if they can stymie the run game, forcing the offense of San Francisco on Jimmy G's arm, you know, that's been a problem for San Francisco this year. He's a good quarterback. He just hasn't had a year like he's capable of. And then, you know, applying the pressure. And I think stopping the run, you know, we talk about Parsons and the guys up front. I really am very intrigued to see the rookie linebacker and those big guys, Gregory, all those guys up front, what they can do against the run. If they can get penetration, stop them for one-yard gains, one-yard losses, stuff like that on first down, second down, forcing the long third downs, and then seeing what happens there, like you mentioned. That so, again, everything starts with stopping that run, that San Francisco run. And, again, I really like the chances there for Dallas.
Yeah, you almost think, let's say there's, I don't know, 12 to 15 third downs in the game for San Francisco. You know, let's just throw out 10 because it's a more of a whole number. There's probably going to be more than that, but let's just say there's 10 third downs for San Francisco. If three of those are, say, seven and longer, but the other seven are like 4 yards and shorter, that's not a good sign for the Cowboys defense because that means they aren't bottling up that run. But if they can get that ratio flipped the other way, we're 65 to 75% of San Francisco's third downs are at that third and seven or longer, that's when the havoc starts. And that's when those guys, Michael Parsons doesn't have to be a middle linebacker. He could be a pass rusher, you know, and then all the attention that goes to him, Gregory, Lawrence, it's just hard to block them all. San Francisco did get some good news yesterday with Trent Williams. He had missed some practice. He was back. And so that clearly helped the 49ers offensive line to have what most people think is the best offensive lineman in the league right now at left tackle with the former OU star Trent Williams, apparently going to be able to be healthy enough to play. And so, you know, that kind of – maybe that negates one of those guys with his fantastic abilities. But still, there's a bunch of others that are coming at you. And I think you're right, Dallas stopping the run, I think, or limiting the run to allow the pass rush to try to get home is a big factor defensively for the Dallas Cowboys in this game. So let's shift our focus. Tampa, Philly. I would say most people don't give Philadelphia much chance in this one because of just the quarterback matchup. You've got Jalen Hurts versus Tom Brady. Seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing against Hurts. Listen, it's Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady in the playoffs. You know, the Antonio Brown saga kind of continues, and there's, I don't want to say there are issues, but there's stuff happening at Tampa Bay, but this is Tom Brady in the playoffs, and he's kind of like, you know, we've used these analogies all the time. You don't pick against him until he proves you wrong. And
injuries at some point might catch up with Tampa. Probably not this week, but here's the one way. I mean, when you look at the matchup, you know, Philly's defense has been pretty good all across. 9th against the run, 11th against the pass, 10th total as far as yards per game. Tampa Bay's offense is pass heavy. Period. They rush at 25th best. They throw at the best in the league. So if Philly's pass defense can hold up, and then on the other side, you've got a great matchup. You've got the best run offense in Philadelphia against the third best rush defense in Tampa Bay. So if Philly can kind of crack that code, that's the only way to me, is be able to run the ball, let Jalen hit a couple of things on play action because you've established the run, but most of the part of it, keep the ball away. And you do that by running it, and Philly's the best run team in the league, according to yards per game. But the problem is Tampa Bay's defense is third best. So, you know, it's kind of like iron trying to sharpen iron there, and who can Philly actually break that code and rush the football to keep Brady on the sidelines, because this one, kind of like what we talked about yesterday with Pittsburgh and Kansas City, if Brady gets the whole, he gets 10 possessions in this game, Philly's probably got zero shot. But if they can limit that to 7 or 8, maybe Philadelphia can figure out a way to hang in there. But I wouldn't, this feels like, okay, it's Tom Brady against Jalen Hurts. The Bucs are going to win.
Yeah, simple formula for any football game at any level is keep it out of the stars' hands. And if
right.
And that's Tom Brady in this case. So if the Eagles can, control the ball, control the clock, limit offensive possessions for Tampa Bay, Philly has a chance. But I just don't. It's not a big chance, but they have a slim chance if they can. They can execute that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Looking at Tampa Bay stats as a team, because they throw it the best in the league at over 300 yards a game. They're the only team that was able to accomplish that. But their pass defense is 20th worst or 20th best. So their rush defense. It's like they built a defense to not allow you to keep the ball out of their hands, right? Unless you can throw it. You can't do it the conventional way of pounding the rock at Tampa Bay's defense to keep Brady off the field. You got to throw it at him to do that. And what happens when you throw it, bigger plays seem to happen as opposed to the run game, which gets them back out there. So it's pretty interesting how that team is built there in Tampa. I know their pass defense has been hurt by some injuries in the secondary as well. The final game on Monday night, the first Monday night playoff game ever, scheduled anyway, Rams against Arizona. Obviously, these two teams are division mates. They played twice, and interestingly enough, the road team won each game in this series this year. And by the way, these are the two best road teams in the league. The Rams are 7-2.
And listen, Arizona, you have to be in that division.
That's right. That's right. Arizona 8-1 on the road this season. And so, man, this to me looks like the most fun game.
Yes.
Because they know each other and what are going to be the wrinkles. I look back at the two games that were played. The Rams consistently got pressure in both games on Kyler. They sacked him 3 times in the first game, 4 in the second. The Rams won the first game 37-20, or excuse me, Arizona won 37-20 game one. The Rams won 30-23 in game two. They did pressure Kyler, but the main difference between the two games, Arizona at least, offensively, in game one, in which they won by 17 points, Chase Edmonds and James Conner rushed it 30 times for 170 yards. In game two, Kyler Murray carried it 7 times for 61 yards, and that was their leading rusher. So instead of the back getting 170 in a win, the quarterback got 60 in a loss. So maybe that's a key for Arizona to get the running backs established and creating some breathing space for Kyler against that vaunted Rams defense and the pass rush with Donald and Von Miller.
Yeah, and a balanced offense, and it can't be all on Kyler with his legs and his arm. They're going to have more wrinkles on offense to allow Kyler to get that, like you said, get that pressure off of him. That's where it starts for me. And that's a tough defense to go up and do that against.
Yeah, it is. And another thing, Arizona wasn't able to pressure Stafford hardly at all in either game. And so, his numbers looked pretty good in both. He threw 2 touchdowns and a pick in the loss. And then in the win a couple weeks ago, he threw 3 touchdowns and didn't turn it over. That's the Arizona defense hasn't been able to put much pressure on Matthew Stafford in either one of those games against the Rams. So that's something to probably watch for as well, because as we know, pressure affects quarterbacks. It just does, and especially pressure up the middle. And that's where I think the Rams, as much as anybody else in the league, have an advantage against Kyler, and that is because of number 99, Aaron Donald, right up the middle. You think back to that game, watch the last couple of drives in the game that the Rams won. It was him. It was him right up the middle, and Kyler having to make decisions. Do I leak out? Do I stay in? And it was too late by the time Donald beat his guy. And so, pressure right in his face is the hardest thing to deal with as a quarterback, any quarterback. It doesn't matter who it is. They don't want that coming right at them. From the sides, they can step up. They can, roll out or whatever. But when it's coming right up the middle, man, it's just hard for a lot of those guys to make decisions quickly enough to be as effective as what they need to be. Give me your picks. on these three games.
Well, clearly I'm all about Dallas. I don't know why. I just have this feeling that they're going to be okay. I think they're better than just a three-point favorite at home. They see the chances that they have this year with this offense. I think they take care of this this classic playoff rivalry in the 49ers, and they win by 10-plus. Cardinals, well, I'll go Eagles, Bucks. Let's go. Come on. It's the Bucks, right? It's Jalen, or it's Tom Brady going against Jalen Hurts. I'll take Tom Brady every day. But I think, listen, Jalen Hurts, I think it's going to be really interesting for me. I was thinking about this last night. Jalen Hurts is in a weird spot. He's got his team to the playoffs. But if you look at the draft next year, first round, I believe it's the Eagles have two picks, maybe three in the first round. Are the Eagles still committed to Jalen Hurts, or will they go and get another quarterback in next year or this coming spring's draft? This is a chance for Jalen Hurts to put that doubt away for the GM here. If he can come out and perform well and maybe even pull off an upset, that's some motivation I think he's going to have. But I think it's Tom Brady all day and the Bucks. And that Monday night game, man, flip a coin. That one's going to be so fun because of everything you said. Divisional rivals, Cardinals came in red hot start the year. Rams, they look like the favorites, and they're going, like Dakota said on the text line, they're going all in with the acquisitions they made in the middle of the season. Of course, also getting Stafford in the offseason. Because it's at home in L.A., I give the Rams a slight edge.
Yeah, Tampa Bay is going to be silly. I mean, it's just it's Tom Brady against Jalen Hurts. It's just no offense to Jalen. He's a bit better than almost anybody thought he would be in the NFL. I think your point is pretty well made about the draft. The good news for him is the picks are pretty high, and I don't know if there's a quarterback in this draft that's worthy of any of those picks.
Right.
And so he may get him another year just to show what he can do. I think Dallas wins a tie one. The one thing that would concern me as a Cowboys fan in a tight game, can we trust Legatron to make field goals and extra points? I'm not 100% sure. And then Rams versus Arizona. Golly, I think it's going to be the best game. I would lean toward Arizona just because of the way they played on the road and for a reason that we're going to talk about next, and that is which of these quarterbacks has the most pressure on them to win this week. And to me, the guy quarterbacking the Rams is leaps and bounds number one on that list.
Yeah, great.
All right, Jared, before the break we were talking about it, kind of previewing the topic. Which quarterbacks have the most pressure on them going into this week? There's 12 quarterbacks on the list that are playing. Obviously, there's two others out there that made the playoffs that are getting a bye. But of the 12 this week, which ones have the most pressure on them? Here's what I'm going to start. Before we get to the most, I've got five guys that I think have essentially zero pressure on them this week. Okay.
Okay.
Big Ben has zero pressure.
No expectation there.
None.
Yeah.
You know, I understand it might be his last game of his career, so maybe that ratchets a little bit up. But here's the deal. He's won two Super Bowls. His legacy is set in stone. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He has zero pressure, plus the fact that nobody thinks he's going to win. So I've got Ben on that list. I've got Jalen Hurts on that list. Joe Burrow, Derek Carr, Mac Jones. To me, those five, zero pressure this week. The two in the middle, I have Kyler Murray and Tom Brady. Tom Brady isn't on the no pressure list just because, you know, of his legacy building towards the greatest athlete of all time in any sport, right? And the clock is ticking. He's 44 years old or whatever. I mean, eventually it's over for him. So that's the pressure, I think. How much more can he build legacy-wise in the years he's still got? And then for me, Murray is kind of outside of that top five. There's the other guys just have more on them than what Kyler does, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with all that. You mentioned one in the no pressure list. Tell me those. Oh, Derek Carr. I think there's a little pressure on him. A little pressure on Derek Carr. you know, the last time Raiders made the playoffs, he was injured.
Yeah, he had his ankle. I'll tell you why I give him none is everything they've had to overcome, from the rug stuff, you know, all the off-field distractions, losing their head coach to the way they did with Gruden, you know, in the middle of the year.
Yeah,
that's why I would put him on the no-pressure list, just because he's already overcame so much.
They could lose, and they could say, man, they've had to deal with so much.
Exactly.
I see that. But as far as the on-field stuff, though, he's a guy that's, you know, he's 30. He's been in the league for so long.
Right.
And, you know, that window is more or less closed. I'm not saying he's going to retire tomorrow or after the game, but I think there's pressure there as far as him personally, you know, to finally be 100% in a playoff game. And to see what happens, you know, and going up against the quarterback, that, like you said, no pressure on this kid, on Joe Burrow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're already ready to throw a parade because they're back in the playoffs, Cincinnati.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
A little pressure there for Derek Carr.
Okay, so number one on the list, I don't even think it's close. It's Matthew Stafford.
Yes.
And I think Dakota laid it out better than I could have on the text that he sent at the first of the show when we previewed this topic. He was traded to a championship-caliber team to replace the guy who couldn't get it done with the expectations that he could. The Rams went all in with their signings. They got OBJ. They got Von Miller in the middle of the season. It's Super Bowl or bust for them. That is exactly right. I can't disagree with anything Dakota said in that text. And for that reason, among others, I mean, you know, Matthew Stafford never won a playoff game in Detroit. I think only played it one. But he was brought to L.A. to be the Super Bowl winning quarterback because they didn't think Jared Goff could be that guy. This team is built for now. They kicked the can down the road with massive cap things coming up in their future. It's now, right now, for Matthew Stafford, and that's why, to me, he has every bit the most pressure on him this week.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm agreeing with on the text line, Dakota, and what you just said. Everything laid out right there. I completely agree. They brought him in to take L.A. to that next level. I mean, they were good. And then they brought him in, and they wanted to get championship good. And if he comes in, loses in the wild card weekend, that's in Showtime L.A. that's a lot of pressure on this guy. Absolutely agree.
Yeah, even Jared Goff got him to a Super Bowl.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and they don't want to get to a Super Bowl. They want to get there, and they want to win the whole thing. And they think
that's right.
They don't get Matthew Stafford unless they think he's a guy who can do it. So there is a ton of pressure on this guy.
Well, and think back to the narrative coming out of that Super Bowl loss to the Patriots is the only reason we didn't win because we needed a better quarterback. Well, now they've got it, so here it is. I've got that one. Who would you say is next behind Matthew Stafford?
Wow, I mean, it's going to be a big drop-off after Matthew Stafford and the pressure, but let's see. I almost want to say either Dak or Allen.
I've got those two next.
In that order?
I have Josh Allen as number two because I think he has more of an open space in the AFC because of how unpredictable it is, right? I mean, does anybody think that Josh Allen can't go into Tennessee and win an AFC title game? Of course not. You know what I'm saying? Whereas for the NFC quarterbacks outside of Stafford, can they go to Green Bay? A lot of people say no. You can't go beat Rodgers in Green Bay. But on the other side in the AFC, your choice gets to be Tannehill in Nashville.
Yeah.
So that's why I would put Josh Allen at number two and followed right there by Dak. I mean, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, he just signed the giant extension for all the money and all that. So for sure, Dak Prescott's got a ton of pressure on him. But I would put him just a skosh behind Josh Allen because of the difficulty of the path that the Dallas Cowboys have in the NFC versus Josh Allen has in the AFC.
And plus, if you're not used to pressure as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you shouldn't be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
Agree with that.
He has to deal with that week four of the regular season up till now. That is the, if you're the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to get criticism every week, week in, week out, all year long. That's just the nature of the beast with that position. And he should be used to it by now.
Think about the difference in coming out of that Monday night game when Josh Allen lost a home game against a team that ran the ball three times.
Yeah.
You know what would have happened if that had been Dak Prescott? A totally different narrative, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would have been totally different, to your point. Number four, I've got Jimmy Garoppolo. And the reason I put him that high on this list is because he may be playing for his job. If he's not able to go into Dallas and win that game, he may not be the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. And then at that point, who wants him? You know?
Right.
So I put him at four, and then I've got Mahomes at five. Because Mahomes, yes, he's got the MVP, he's got a Super Bowl MVP and a trophy in the trophy case there, but he is trying to legacy build like Tom Brady, right? I mean, he's kind of the heir apparent to how many can he win. And so that's where that
pressure comes. He's the representative of not just the Kansas City Chiefs and what they're trying to do, but he's the face of all other young quarterbacks, this new generation of young quarterbacks in the league right now. You know, we talk about Big Ben, we talk about Tom Brady. You know, their time is coming up. You know, now we're talking about Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, shoot, even Baker Mayfield at times, and then, you know, you end up Mahomes, and Mahomes is the face of that new generation of quarterbacks, so he's kind of carrying that flag in a way.
Oh, sure, yeah, he's the heir apparent, and he's just waiting to get the baton either passed to him by these guys retiring or just taking it away from him because they can't beat him. And one would think that he's going to have a chance to wrestle that thing away if he can continue to win, because standing in the Super Bowl, the odds are it could be either Rodgers or it could be Brady, you know. And so there, he had a chance last year, and Brady said, "No, sir, not yet, young fella." So now, you know, the pressure's on him to get back there. Not as much as everybody else, though, because he has already won that Super Bowl. He's played in it twice. You know, he's on the road to being one of the, you know, the most acclaimed ever. Not yet, and that's what he's trying to get. And I think that's where the pressure comes for Pat Mahomes. All right, real quick, we've got to get out of here. Run down that schedule again one more time. High school basketball, what's on, what's off?
Okay, what we know is happening, what games are happening, and I just checked with the source in Calumet, because that's where Arapahoe goes. That could be a good boys game, too. That is on, as far as we know. So that's happening on Paragon TV, and also Hammond hosting Sealing is happening. Merritt and Leedy, they're still playing tonight. What's not happening, games that have been canceled and or postponed, Canute at Cheyenne, no game there. Also, Elk City, was that at Elgin? Not going to happen tonight. And the Eric games, there's a game tonight versus Hollis. And tomorrow, I believe that's usually an afternoon game, at the Lawton Coliseum versus Big Pasture, told those two are not happening. So that's what we know right there with the Paragon schools. And again, I know we're after time here, but if you want to text in and tell us about any other school, it doesn't have to be Paragon schools. If you're out here in Western Oklahoma, your team is not playing or playing, and you want to get that out there just to be sure, we will get that on the Skinny on Sports report. We'll throw that on our socials, 580-225-9698. We'll keep an eye on that text line throughout the day if you want to let us know about your game.
All right, man. Thanks.
Hey, have fun this weekend.
Yeah, I guess the one positive of what's going on in our lives is I get to tell my wife, listen, we can't leave. We got to watch football.
There you go. Just make sure. Hopefully you're stocked up full of food and beverages.
Yes, we did. She did some of that yesterday, and we got loads of beef in the freezer. Have a good weekend.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.